Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what vestiges of a Jewish past are there in the Spanish town of Fermoselle on the Portuguese border? Jeannie Milgram was born in Havana, Cuba, into a Roman Catholic family of Spanish ancestry. In an unparalleled work of genealogy, she was able to fully document her unbroken maternal lineage going back as far as 1430 to pre-Inquisition Spain and Portugal. She has traveled extensively to Fermoselle, the village of her ancestors in the Zamora region of Spain, while doing field research on the town's Jewish past. She's currently the president of the Jewish Genealogical Society of Greater Miami, president of Tarbut Sefarad Fermoselle in Spain, and president of the Society for Crypto-Judaic Studies at Colorado State University in Colorado Springs. She's the author of the book, My 15 Grandmothers, as well as How I Found My 15 Grandmothers, a Step-by-Step Guide. The books were both winners of the 2015 Latino Author Book Awards. She also writes for several online sites, including eSefarad, as well as the Journal of Spanish, Portuguese, and Italian Crypto-Jewry. Her work has appeared in the Jerusalem Post, the Miami Herald, and other publications around the world. In 2012, she received the Florida State Genealogical Society's Genealogy Outstanding Achievement Award for the outstanding pioneering work she's done in genealogy. Jeannie spoke with us about her personal journey to Judaism and how she traced her Jewish ancestry back to the 15th century.
Thank you very much for speaking with us, Jeannie. Most of the book, My 15 Grandmothers, is about your discovery and interest and conversion to Judaism, so I would like to begin with that. Can you tell us first a little bit about your early childhood in Cuba and how you were raised and how you became interested in Judaism?
Sure. I was raised in Havana only up until the age of four, and in a family totally Roman Catholic of Spanish origin. My grandparents on my mother's side were cousins, and they were born in a small village in Spain. As far as how the family was always a very Catholic, Roman Catholic family, we moved to Miami when I was four. This was in 1960. And I was placed in Catholic schools, Catholic grade schools, and it was a total immersion in a Roman Catholic environment, Cuban and Roman Catholic. But inside, I never felt I fit in. I never felt I was part of that. I really didn't know why I didn't feel that way, but I just felt that somehow, even at a very young age, 6, 7, 8 years old, I felt somehow these were not my people. And I couldn't really talk about it. I didn't feel that I could come out to my parents and say something's wrong. I had problems with the ideology of the Catholic faith, and I also had problems with me fitting in with the mold that I had been put into. Until I started meeting some Jewish children, like in summer camps, because obviously, you know, in such a closed environment, you don't meet them during the school year. And then I started being opened up to Judaism. So those were my earliest memories of being something that I wasn't and trying to find something that where I did fit in.
So these friends of yours in summer camp, how did they influence you? What was it about them that influenced you?
Well, I really don't know. It was amazing. It was just like this one little girl, her name was Rachel, and I was just drawn to her, and she wasn't allowed to eat in the camp. It was a day camp here in Miami. She wasn't allowed to eat, and she brought her own food, and she told me, you know, she was explaining to me in the way a 7-year-old explains, about her religion and about kashrut and why she couldn't eat. And I was just so attracted to this little girl who was so different, yet was somebody that I was able to understand somehow that that had something to do with me on a very deep level and unconscious level. I understood that she had something to do with me, and I didn't quite understand why. Then, you know, the years passed, and I went to a Catholic high school. Back in the day, these were all girls' schools, you know. Then I went to a Catholic university here in Miami as well. And in the Catholic university was when I was really exposed to Judaism by the sisters that ran the Catholic university. They taught comparative religions. I automatically went only to the Jewish classes. And when they taught Judaism, and it was just amazing. Like, the world had opened up to me like I had never known it before. But, you know, life just moves on. And I was not able to do anything about it. Let's put it that way. I married a Catholic man. We had two children. And by now, life just took over. You know, I had two kids and I was married. But somewhere in my late 20s, I just couldn't live that life. We were not religious, my husband and I, my first husband and I. We were not religious, but of course we were raising our children, doing all the Catholic things, the communion, the this and that. But at the late 20s, I just decided I needed to, I was burning with the desire to study Judaism, just burning. And that's exactly when I just kind of went, we both went our separate ways. And I stayed with my children and started really learning and studying about Judaism and actually converted Orthodox in a 4.5 year process.
Yeah, something that I found that was interesting is that you started out making contact with the Restructionist community and then the Reform and then the Conservative.
That was funny because I had difficulty making the leap. So, of course, the Reconstructionists were so welcoming. I was reading a lot. I was reading, many, many hundreds of, not hundreds, but a couple of hundred books on the holidays and this and that. And the Reconstructionists were so welcoming. So I spent a few weeks there. And then it was like too similar to where I had come from. Then I went to the Reform for a couple of months. And that, too, was not fulfilling, and it was also, I had read so much by now, it also didn't go along with the things that I had been reading, and then I went to the Conservative, and that also didn't fit my bill until I walked into a small, little converted house, you know, not one of these super luxurious synagogues that I had been going to, but this tiny little house, and then right there, I mean, I opened that door, and I fit in, and I said to myself, you know, I'm home. And I think a lot of it has to do with that. Obviously, my family was not happy. You know, whose family is going to be happy when you make this dramatic leap? So my family was not happy. And inside, I said, you know what? I'm not going to make this whole, you know, to use a Yiddish or Hebrew word, I'm not going to do this whole tumult to my life and not go all the way. Really, you don't, you know, turn your family and your life upside down to just go halfway. So I decided to go Orthodox because, A, it was the most meaningful to me at the time and still is, and it was also my way of going the whole way. And so I did go to the Orthodox. It took a long, long time to convert. When I finally emerged on the other side, I mean, I had a single mom with two kids, and it was a very challenging place for me to be, having a totally kosher home and going to synagogue and going and having these children in the house who were going to church on Sundays with my ex-husband. So it was a very challenging, challenging time for me. It really was. But I had no idea that I was anything but a convert for years and years and years.
You had done a lot of research and a lot of studying before you even started to convert, and yet they really made it difficult for you.
Well, one of the things that one of the reasons that it was so difficult is that I was not converting my children along with me. And the Beit Din did not really feel or understand that it could work. So, you know, understanding how the Orthodox, you know, mentality is, I get it. They did not, you know, they don't want to convert people that are not going to be in for the long haul. They want to make sure you're in for the long haul. And if my children at home were going to continue to not be Jewish, now my son was older, but my daughter was a little girl. So how was it going to work? And I think that, you know, they were rightly concerned. I can see how it was a problem. It was a challenge. I mean, no ifs or buts about it. It was a challenge that my daughter could eat anything she wanted or do anything she wanted on, you know, at her dad's house, and she was so highly restricted at my house. And that's the way it was, and I can understand the concern of the rabbis, yes.
Did this create problems between you and your children?
No, actually it did not. My son, after a couple of years, he moved out, but he was already in his 20s. There's an 11-year difference. And my daughter grew up, actually, I married a few years later to my husband, who's from Belgium. And Michael and I raised my daughter in a very Orthodox environment and home. And, of course, at the time, we didn't know that she was also Jewish because I had not done the searching for the roots yet. But she grew up in a home where on Friday nights we would observe Shabbat. She knew the words to all the grace after meals, all the benching. She knew all the songs that we sing before Shabbat. She knew every holiday, she knew the Haggadah by, you know, practically by heart. So the reality is that my daughter grew up in this environment, but she did not identify with the environment. This is just something that my parents do. Right of that, then, you know, she just was in the other Catholic environment. Today, my daughter is a spiritual woman, but does not practice either religion.
Having been a baptized Catholic, would she also have had to convert if she wanted to be Jewish?
At the time, yes. At the time, yes, but then afterwards, so as the story goes, so my grandmother died several years after I had converted and left me a Star of David and a Hamsa, and I realized that my grandmother had been teaching me different Jewish customs all along, mostly about cooking and about checking for blood in the, you know, in the eggs and putting challah and burning it in the oven and a lot of little things that she had taught me. And once she died and I got this Jewish symbolic jewelry, I decided to search and see if my family could have been from the pre-Inquisition Jews, which before I had no thought in my mind that this could have been. I converted out of a strong ideology and from my soul. I did not convert because I thought I was Jewish, ever. That was, did not enter my head. And once I started searching and I hired genealogists and I went back, initially I did it to make my daughter Jewish automatically.
But would she be considered Jewish automatically by the Jewish authorities having been baptized Catholic?
Yes, today, yes. But it was only at the end of the story that I knew. In other words, not by virtue of my having converted,
right?
But by virtue of later having found my Jewish lineage, my daughter is considered Jewish today.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about the Hamsa and the Star of David. Did you ever discover where they had come from?
My mother told me that she had no idea. They were given to me on the day that my grandmother died. Now, my grandmother knew I had converted. She would always tell me how dangerous it was what I was doing. And I always thought she meant it was dangerous for my soul. I did not realize that she was really trying to tell me it was dangerous to be a Jew. My grandmother knew I was converted, and my grandmother subsequently later came to my wedding to Michael, which was in the small synagogue under a chuppah. So she was well aware that I was, let's say, knee deep or neck deep into the religion.
This is something I also couldn't really understand, because by that time you had moved to Miami. Miami has a very large Jewish population, and I'm surprised that she still considered it to be dangerous, because it's perfectly normal to be Jewish.
Well, the reality is that while Miami does have a large Jewish population, it also has a very large Cuban population and a Cuban Catholic population. And like anywhere, there's, I'll use the word ghetto, but there's, you know, different areas in town where people live. Growing up, I did not grow up in any area. I grew up in a Catholic Cuban area.
Mm.
So you don't really have an opportunity to meet Jews or go to, even though, yes, there's so many, but they were mostly at the time in Miami Beach. They were elderly. It wasn't like, you know, Miami was overrun. They were just tiny little pockets. So once I started researching my family roots, I started being very vocal on social media also about what I was doing, and I was leaving posts all over the internet looking for these relatives or those relatives. And my grandfather, who was the first cousin of my grandmother, and both were from this village in Spain, both of their families, I finally, you know, started going back grandmother after grandmother. And I hired a genealogist in Spain to help me dig up every single birth and death certificate and so on. So I went back one by one by one until I reached the 15th grandmother. And that was the year 1545. And in 1545, it was unclear 100% that they were Jewish, because I had found only one Inquisition document that alluded to a marriage into the family. But I wanted this to be something that worked, so I took everything to Israel, to a Beit Din, to try to get them to acknowledge that the family had been Jewish, but I did not have enough evidence. I finally had to go to the village of my ancestors. I had to scrounge around in the village, which is called Fermoselle. It's right on the border of the Duero River between Spain and Portugal. I finally had to go there and try to find that there had been a Jewish community. But once I was there, I realized that my family, I couldn't find them in the Spanish Inquisition because they had left for Portugal. And funny enough, I only learned this instinctively once I was standing in the village. It had not occurred to me, 9-8 years of research that I had been doing on paper, it wasn't until I was standing in that village and looking across the river, and I said, ah, that's it, they were in Portugal. And sure enough, the minute I fired up my computer and I went into the Portuguese Inquisition records, I was able to go and find my grandmother's number 16 through 22.
Wow.
Were all from Portugal. And Inquisition records, I have 40 on my direct maternal lineage, all from the Portuguese Inquisition. Well, able to follow this back to 1405.
So they finally accepted it in Israel, right?
I finally took all of this paperwork back to Israel. It was a tour, you know, it was a constant schlepping of paperwork back to Israel. And in my final letter that I did get from the head of the Beit Din Gadol, I got a letter stating that I had been born Jewish, that I had reached the religion in a weird way, you know, kind of coming around to it on my own, but that my descendants and myself should never be questioned again about our Jewish heritage. So it actually stated I was born Jewish. As far as my children are concerned, I have been told by other rabbis that they are considered Jewish if they take on mitzvot.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if my daughter should decide to start living Jewishly, she would be considered, by virtue of the research and the letter, she would be considered a Jew without having to do any other, you know, any other process.
For a long time, you were reticent about going to Fermoselle.
I was scared. You know, Linda, I was scared. I really was. I hadn't found a true Inquisition process on my family. I had been searching for this for years. I was so scared that I was wrong. And as I said, I came into Judaism on my own, I didn't go searching for ancestors, because I see a lot of the people that I talk to and I meet on Facebook and on the internet, they go searching for the ancestors first, and that's not what I did. I just, you know, had this Jewish feeling, and so I was scared. What if they weren't really there? What if they weren't really Jewish? And so, you know, I see that fear stops a lot of people also nowadays. And you know, my advice is to just follow your gut. Follow your gut, because your gut is following your soul. And when it's speaking so loudly and it's burning so much in there, it may be a lot of work, and it may take a very long time, and it may be a very slippery slope. But follow your heart, because you will find it at the end of the day.
So what finally pushed you to go at that time when you went?
Well, I had reached a brick wall, because in Spain I had only found that one Inquisition record of somebody that had married into the family, and the rabbis would have been kind of okay, but they also, there was no Jewish history in that village. And they pointed out to me that Jews just don't live alone. So if I was claiming that my family were all Jews, and in 500 years they had not moved from that village, nothing in history was telling us that there was a Jewish presence in that village. So the rabbis in Israel, they challenged me to find that there had been Jews living there. And so, you know, it became important for me to go there, and I brought historians, and I dug and I dug until I found a synagogue arch that was there. I found one mikvah public, I found one mikvah underground, and I found a synagogue that had been underground. And I found a lot of markings on the walls, and I also found that in this village there's tunnels connecting the whole village under the houses. And this is granite. This is granite from gosh knows when. And they have dug under the village. You can go from one extreme to the other, going under the houses. So why does this village have this maze of tunnels underneath? Who knows? But the reality is that they are there. This mikvah is still there in the outside, you know, with a fence around it. You can see the clear water. So I was able to find. So my challenge to go was to see why I couldn't find these Inquisition records, as well as to prove that the village had a Jewish history, as the rabbis had challenged me.
But you also discovered that it was an important village in Jewish history.
It is an important village in Jewish history, but it was hidden. Its importance was hidden. The importance has only come out via the documentation that I have found. And now there's been a lot of information coming out about the Jews of the Zamora region. And Fedemoseia, the village of my family, is in the Zamora region. And now, you know, a lot more information has come out that there were Jews in all the settlements around. And yes, it was the home of the beginning of the Carvajal family, who later went to the New World and, you know, became the first governor of Nueva León, Luis de Carvajal. His family is also from that village, and I happen to be part of that family. His great-grandmother is my 14th grandmother. So it's just amazing that this speck of a village had a convergence of Jewish life.
Something else that I found very interesting is that when you did your research, as you went back through the generations, you discovered that your family had a priest in every generation. Could you explain the reason for that?
Well, when I converted, obviously my family wasn't happy. My mom wasn't happy. No one was happy. But after a while, they got used to it. But then when I started doing research to make everybody Jewish, you know, it got hairy around here. You know, the heat got turned up. And one of the things that my mom used to tell me is, oh, this is so wonderful. You know, you think that everybody was Jewish, but there's a priest in every generation. And I have subsequently learned that the crypto-Jews, like my family, they would make that one person would be a priest so that all the important ceremonies in time, that priest would always make sure that things were being done in accordance to Jewish law. So he would leave something out of the baptism ceremony, and he would make sure that the marriage ceremony was done properly. So there was always a priest, and in most families that I have studied, there's a priest in every generation.
I think that that's really fascinating. We're running out of time, and so I would like to say that we will
plan a future program so that we can speak with you about your new project and the inaugural session of the Knesset Caucus and the conference of the Anusim Diaspora Today, Jewish Challenge and Hope, which was recently held in Israel.
Back
that
to
will be
Israel.
Very exciting.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Jeannie.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And as we mentioned, Jeannie is working on an exciting new project, and she also participated in the inaugural session of the Knesset Caucus and the conference, the Anusim Diaspora Today, Jewish Challenge and Hope, which was recently held in Israel. We plan to speak with her about both of these on an upcoming program. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.